Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Support WrestleTalk!
Give us a subscribe.
Making their way to the ring at a combined weight of undeniably sexy, hailing from London, the Wrestle Ramble Podcast!
We're just going to kick off with the guy who was revealed in the crowd. NXT TakeOvers love to do this. Mm-hmm. They will show someone in the crowd in between matches, and it just so happens to be one of the hottest free agents in wrestling, or someone who's just left Impact, or someone who's mysteriously disappeared from Ring of Honor, or just wrestling around on the indies. And this one was Keith Lee, a man we are who opened this show in that bumper just before. Some excellent matches with Tomohiro Ishii over the last 6 months in Rev Pro that we just keep on banging on about, and now he's there. The man has so much charisma, you couldn't hear what he was saying, but just his face, he oozes star presence.
He was essentially just saying bask in my glory, which is his catchphrase, and the fact that he is limitless. He actually is the man behind one of my favorite matches of all time. You know, we were talking last week about the Kazuchika Okada Kenny Omega thing, and you were like, is it the greatest match you've ever seen? And I said, it is the greatest match probably this ever happened, but it's not my favourite match of all time. However, the match that Keith Lee had against Donovan Dijak in Pro Wrestling Guerrilla last year was one of the greatest things I've ever seen. It was just like, that was a 7-star match. It was absolutely faultless.
And now Dijak is also in NXT. He just rather unceremoniously debuted in a losing effort on TV the other week.
He certainly did, with a new name. I think he's just called Chris Dijak.
Chris Dijak.
Which doesn't sound as cool.
But Keith Lee, he was billed as Keith Lee, so it looks like he's going to be keeping that name. I just can't. If you don't know who we're talking about, I mean, you should really, because we talk about him a lot on this channel. Mm-hmm. Go and find some clips of him. Just search Keith Lee. The man, the way he carries himself, we realized recently that he moves like Rikishi.
Yes.
And that he's in his head whip back and forth. And he's a very, very large man, 330 pounds, about 6'5", mm-hmm. who can do moonsaults.
What was the way you described him? I said he's as wide as a refrigerator.
He's
like
a fridge freezer.
He looks like a big fridge freezer. And then I saw that fridge freezer do a moonsault. And like there's a really good GIF that you can find on Twitter between him and Jeff Cobb, which is just absolutely wonderful, because I think like Jeff Cobb is one of the greatest wrestlers in the world as well. But like he's just, it's so good, and he is an incredible, incredible talent. I'm really looking forward to seeing what he can do in NXT.
Yeah,
and with a really big light.
That particular clip is two very large guys, Cobb and Lee, just doing the international leapfrog. Goes down, like moving around like cruiserweights. Cruiserweights in slow motion, I grant you.
Yes.
But still, it's very impressive.
Yeah.
Like they're underwater.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I don't know what's going to happen next for Lee.
I was going to say, like, the first thing I thought was just like, man, I want to see him and Aleister Black, like, you know, just slump straight into it. But then again, like, with Aleister Black, I mean, we'll talk about that when we do the full review. Like, I really want, like, a bigger and better feud for Aleister Black going into Brooklyn 4 than he's had going into Chicago. But yeah, I really think that to just get Lee, like, get the ball rolling straight away. What I'm afraid of they doing is doing essentially what they've done with War Raiders, which is War Raiders had this big old, like, debut at the last NXT show, which was NXT New Orleans, TakeOver New Orleans. They debuted, like, the week after that. Like, it was the same taping, but they debuted the week after, just interrupting a tag team match. But since then, they have done nothing. Mm. Like, they have had squash matches, and they have beaten Heavy Machinery and Tito Sabatelli and Riddick Moss. And you're like, cool, but like, what's next? Like, so I don't want Keith Lee to do, because I just think that he's much more than doing that, is to just bring him in and just have him do squash matches for a while and then be like, we've actually got an out for you, I guess.
Yeah, definitely. That would be not the worst thing for him, because squash matches would be a great way to build up his character. But yeah, he needs a story. He needs a goal immediately when he comes in. And for me, the NXT title is too early, and that's you've got Black and you've got Ricochet for that title. However, you've got a North American championship that's gathering dust around Adam Cole's waist. Have a Keith Lee, Adam Cole, EC3 feud over that, mixed in with some Lee squash matches, staring holes in Cole on commentary or something.
Yeah.
Like, this is what I can do.
Yeah.
My name's Keith Lee.
That sounds pretty great. I was going to say Adam Cole actually is a really good example of something that he can do. Because, like, you compare the journey that Ricochet has had since debuting compared to the one that EC3 has had. Like, Ricochet, the first thing he did was go straight into the storyline with the Velveteen Dream, and it's been probably the most talked about thing on NXT in the build between New Orleans and Chicago, because it has been a really good, because the Dream is so good at doing these sorts of feuds, and Ricochet is incredible. But EC3 hasn't really had a lot to do, so they kind of sort of build. I guess EC3 is now going to sort of find his footing coming up soon. He was in the crowd here again. Triple H was really putting him over on the conference call that he had with the wrestling journalists. So I think that, like, yeah, maybe he doesn't like do anything straight off the bat. Maybe he doesn't have the Ricochet journey, but he maybe has the EC3 journey. Like, so nothing at Brooklyn, but something at whatever the Survivor Series one is.
There's a lot of talent right now, and there's only 5 matches per takeover card, so not everyone can have something.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
We got everything right, by the way, in our predictions.
We're very good. I did like the comment that someone had left. Was like, what a pointless prediction show, because you've just said the same things. I was like, well, I mean, what do you want us to do? Like, just do opposite day. I'll just say the opposite to what you do.
We're not going to toy around with, we've got the exact same, so one of us has to do a different one, because this is on the line. And at the moment, this lives. I don't know what happens with a draw. Well, champion's advantage, I keep. So, yeah, it's coming down to Money in the Bank tonight for what happens to this jacket.
And there are some wild differences on there.
Yeah, but it might be equaled out by our lady partner predictions. It's all kicking off. But this show, so yeah, we won't go through our predictions because we got all of it right.
Mm-hmm.
5 for 5. But it kicked off with the undisputed era of Roderick Strong and Kyle O'Reilly. Kyle O'Reilly, by the way, is my favourite wrestler in WWE.
I said to you last week, he's got my new favourite gimmick at the moment, which is getting people's names wrong. Calling him Peter Dune. Mm. Like, it's so great because it's so flippant. Like, he doesn't do it to be like, by the way, I'm saying your name wrong. I think that's in his character. That's just what he thinks his name is. Because he doesn't care.
He's such an unsung hero
as well.
Because he is so good in the ring. So good in the ring. And I just love the style he wrestles in. And yeah, he's just got this douchebag persona.
Yeah.
The way drips off him.
The way he plays like his belt like a guitar to the Undisputed Era riff. It's so good.
Yeah.
Because it's just like Hulk Hogan. But like Hulk Hogan did it because he thought it looked cool. I'm pretty sure Kyle O'Reilly does it because, like, no, it makes you look like a complete dick, and that's why I'm going to do it.
They were defending against Oney Lorcan and Danny Burch, also known as the Big Bald Bastards.
They are big, bald, mean dudes.
Mm. And they... So the Chicago crowd, great crowd all night, and they're super into everything, but that also means they choose who they cheer. And yeah. Although this was set up as the Undisputed Era as the heels... and Oney Lorcan and Danny Burch were the baby faces, the Chicago crowd were like, "Now we're gonna cheer the Undisputed Era."
And I think that's fair enough because it's kind of surprising that Danny and Oney were put into this position. Like, I know they've been kind of pushed on TV, but it's been like a very sudden push. It's very much just like, and these are the lads we're putting on here, because prior to this, they haven't really been winning matches. So it was really surprising that they're in this sort of tag team title position. That they almost just like inserted themselves into. So I don't think they were really over enough to the point where, okay, these guys are now ready for a tag team title shot. And that was really reflective in this because there was a huge pop when the Shock the System, and like when they came out, massive pop for them from the Chicago crowd. But it was like almost abject silence to Danny Burch and Oney Lorcan because the crowd were like, nah, not that bothered really. But credit where credit is due, these lads turned that around. Because the crowd were booing any time they were on offense and cheering every time the Undisputed Era were offense. But by the end of the match, the crowd were into both teams. Mm. And I think this was one of those moments when an undercard talent that hasn't really been getting a push on TV creates, you know, that buzz about them. So when they debut, so when they come back to TV next week, everyone's like, oh my God, they had that amazing match. It's almost like the Velveteen Dream against Aleister Black.
Yes.
It's like, it's a, you know, a career-making match.
And they got a standing ovation at the end from the crowd. They got the spot to stand in there while the Undisputed Era, even though they won, walked to the back, and in defeat, everyone cheered them. And yeah, hopefully it really does get them over because they were really, really good.
So good.
Well, it was so strange to see, because there were boos, but then the first part of the match was building up to this Oney Lorcan hot tag. Hot tag in, boo! Yeah. Like a really strong boo. And later on, Adam Cole cheats. Really big cheat in breaking up a pin when Burch and Lorcan look to have it won. And the referee sends Cole to the back and the crowd chant, ball S-word.
Yeah, they were not happy with that.
I was like, no, steady on, guys. That was an illegal manoeuvre, and Cole, brilliant. Did you hear what he was yelling as he was going up the ramp? I did nothing wrong!
He's great.
Yeah, really good. But that's how... It's not, you know... It's a testament to all the guys in this match. A lot of people are saying this was their... You said it was your favourite match, did you?
I don't think I've said it to my favourite.
Oh, okay. We haven't spoken, have we? No, a lot of people are saying this was their favourite match on the show.
Looking back on it, it very well could be. We'll, you know, work that out as we sort of go on. But I mean, I just thought it was absolutely terrific. It was just like some amazing spots throughout, incredible storytelling. I was driving to a friend's house yesterday, listening to Gorilla Position doing their predictions for this. And I'm quite a quiet driver, especially if I'm on my own, because I usually listen to podcasts, or if I sometimes listen to music, I'll sing along with the music that I'm listening to.
Great insight.
But I was listening to this, and one of them, I'm not going to name names because I don't want him getting any hate online, but was just like, I really don't like Adam Cole, he does nothing for me. And I literally went, oh, get out!
So I, my lady partner had her lady friend over, and this was Hayley, and Hayley was very taken with Adam Cole, baby.
Well, who wouldn't be?
She was just like, he's got amazing eyes, and I turned, this was that, like, it's rare for someone to show interest in wrestling in my house. So I just pounce and says, he has, hasn't he? He's got really nice eyes. And he's a really good wrestler. And Hayley's like, oh, I used to watch wrestling as a kid. Do you want to watch this match? Because she was leaving this morning. But yes, and then she actually ended, maybe I should get back into wrestling.
Well, I know a good channel where I should start.
But yeah, so Adam Cole is sent to the back and the crowd boo. I mean, that should have been a DQ, really.
It's 100%.
In my eyes. I don't know why the referee was so lenient. And he was, but the commentators should have put that over. Like, the referee obviously wants a winner here,
yeah,
up to his discretion, but they didn't. Not the commentary was good tonight,
yes,
but it wasn't perfect because they did miss out certain key points like that.
Yeah, Morrow wasn't there. He was on, as they said, assignment. He was covering boxing for someone else. So Vic
Showtime.
So Vic Joseph of 205 Live fame was filling in for him. And I thought that Vic did fine, but like, and I think that Vic is actually a very good commentator, but he doesn't have that Morrow Ranallo personality, where Morrow Ranallo is like, it's commentary dialed up to 15. Like, he's just like, anytime like someone does a drop kick, Morrow Ranallo, like, it's like Austin won the title. Like, and he just, you know, carries on. But like, Vic Joseph is in that Todd Phillips mold of just like, if I'm excited, I'm just going to talk louder, but in the same cadence, but it's louder now.
He's a very good commentator, but for me, he's not to everyone's taste. Morrow is an excellent otherworldly level commentator.
Yes, absolutely.
So that's the difference there. So Cole's sent to the back, and this is really where the match went up to the next level through to the end, and the crowd really started to get on the side of the baby faces and the heels, and they were sort of just cheering everything. And there's this beautiful sequence where Lorcan has a single leg crab on Roderick Strong, and Kyle O'Reilly comes in and kicks Lorcan in the face. Of course, only Lorcan, he's a big hard bastard, just looks at him and screams and doesn't let go of the hold. And Kyle O'Reilly like steps back and goes, steady on, mate. And who is it?
Danny
it's
Burch.
Birch runs in and gets Kyle O'Reilly in the crossface. And for a moment there, I was like, oh yeah, because it's a tag team match at a takeover show, there must be a double submission spot. I can't wait for the bit where they both stop each other from tapping, which is an excellent spot, but it is somewhat overdone. But they didn't do that here. There was this just brilliant bit where Kyle O'Reilly rolled through the crossface, so he's underneath looking up at Lorcan and kicks Lorcan's face off of the single leg crab. And then they all four fall down. The crowd really start cheering for everyone, and then they both get up on either side and just do a brawl.
Just do a big old hockey fight, and yeah, it was just a terrific finishing sequence. And as you said, like Undisputed Era, when they did the total elimination and they won, and the crowd gave Oni and Birch a standing ovation at the end. So I've written here, mission accomplished.
Yeah.
Like, this was a match that was designed to get these two over, and holy hell, did that work. I mean, you've spoken very highly of Danny Birch before, because you're mates and that.
I know. So, I've done one show with him once, and he really nice guy. Really nice guy. But he's just got a presence about him that if I ever caught eyes with him in a pub, I would just leave that pub.
Yeah, because he's a bigger boy.
He's just intimidating.
He's the biggest of the bigger boys.
But he's not big, he's just like, he's just
terrifying.
Got that face.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Probably like good like East London hard man. Mm. So like, yeah, and I think they're both really, really great. I really liked the feud that they had that built up this tag team, and I thought they were going to get the push off the back of that, but then, as I said, they've just done nothing but lose matches. But this was, I thought, was a star making match for them as a tag team.
Yeah, really good. I gave it, for those who are interested, on the douchebag scale, 4.25 stars. Loved
it. Does your star rating system just get broken willy-nilly whenever you see a really good match?
Not yet.
No.
I mean, I'm waiting for that Melina Alicia Fox 2. Possibly a 6-star. Then we had Kairi Sane shot in the crowd, to which my lady partner, she was only half paying attention, to be fair, said, oh, is that Asuka? Oh, that was a bit of fun, unintentional racism.
You're half racist.
And then we got Ricochet taking on Velveteen Dream.
I've written here, holy F, that video package ruled.
So good.
So good.
And you know, this was interesting because my lady partner was hanging around, and she just like stopped and started watching this video package because she likes the flips of Ricochet, and she found Velveteen Dream hilarious.
Yeah.
And it's really interesting from someone who doesn't like wrestling to see them slowly get encaptured by stuff like this.
Yeah.
And she probably would have watched the match if she hadn't had to leave. And that's what the main roster needs to be doing. Storytelling and characters of this quality to draw those people who are casuals and don't even think about wrestling to watch it, and then they become invested just because they give it a chance, because they're intrigued by one bit.
And yeah. The story around this feud has been, like, the Dream has been keep saying to Ricochet, anything you can do, I can do better. Because Dream is just like, hey, like, you may be, like, you know, king of the indies and all this, but I'm the Velveteen Dream. I just walked into this place. I'm a homegrown talent. Anything you can do, I can do better. And, like, so that's been a great feud building in. But they then told that throughout this match. It was them trying to just one-up each other. The Dream trying to show that I can do Ricochet's moveset, which he sort of can, but again at half speed. And Ricochet doing the Velveteen Dream's moveset. And it was just a brilliantly told story. I loved this match. I thought this match was absolutely awesome. There's some great moments in this video package that I just want to talk about, because I love, they showed this on NXT. And I was like, that's one of the best video packages I've ever seen. And there's a moment when Ricochet was like, yeah, like, Patrick Clark got his start on Tough Enough and, you know, did this. And then he's like, got handed his contract. And the Dream just goes, Dream doesn't remember that.
Yeah.
That's great.
Like you said, this, it wasn't like the best match in ring wise, because there were botches, because the Dream is still, he's only been wrestling for 2-3 years from the get-go, so that's very impressive. But yeah, there was still some miscommunications, several loudly called spots, but storyline wise and just the way the characters played off each other, the way the story was told through the action, this were, to me, and what I like about wrestling, I preferred it over the tag match. Even though the tag match was like a better in-ring worked match, I just loved the story of it. Like you said, it was anything you can do, I can do better. It started off with Ricochet just doing incredible move after incredible flip, and even like mat-based stuff as well. He was out-wrestling Velveteen all the way over. And then I think Dream just knocks the... It's always Dream's ring IQ. That seems to be his trump card. He knocks the top rope when Ricochet is going to do a springboard. Ricochet falls down, hits his neck, and that gives Dream the opening to go on top for a bit, and that's when he starts to do his versions of Ricochet's moves. Yes. Which are, you know,
yeah, you know,
he tried,
he did,
and
try.
He did hit them.
Yeah, I was gonna say, credit where credit is due. Also, Ricochet came down. I've written, first thing I've written here, Dream's music has such a sweet bass line to it.
That's
but
good.
He came out dressed as Hulk Hogan.
Why is that?
Because Hulk Hogan is coming back, I guess. So it's more of those like indicators, just like, hey, you know, we're okay to mention Hogan's name. We're okay to mention that Hogan is a cool guy. And I did think to myself, I was like, bearing in mind what Hogan got fired for, I'm sure he was less than thrilled about this. Unless, of course, you know, people grow, people change.
No. Look, some of Hulk Hogan's best friends are of that ethnicity.
And are gay.
Yeah, so... So there you go. That's, and this is, you know, Dream is a black man.
Yeah.
I mean, what an ingenious way by WWE to start putting Hulk Hogan colors on African Americans, and you can, yeah,
exactly,
it's, after a while it's fine.
Everyone just forgets. Everyone just moves on.
Yeah, it's just that brainwashing thing. I don't know. I didn't get any. That would make sense, because WWE would definitely have to clear Dream going out in the colours of a disgraced wrestler.
Well, he's doing the mannerisms as well.
Yeah.
He was doing the whole entrance and everything. And Nigel on commentary is saying Hulk Hogan lyrics.
I don't know why I didn't pick up on that. I just thought, Dream's being Dream. Don't see how that relates to Ricochet, because usually he does something to riff off his opponent's character.
But I also wonder as well, because obviously the last time he had a big takeover match that wasn't the ladder match, he was mimicking Rick Rude. Because he had like the tie-dye there, where he'd like drawn like his and Aleister Black's, you know, spray painted them on there. So that's Rick Rude on this pay-per-view. Hogan on this pay-per-view. Maybe he's just like mimicking 80s wrestlers.
No, so it was that for Black. And then in, I guess there's an 80s argument again, because for Cassius Ohno, KO, it was all about how Dream could knock him out in 30 seconds. And he came down in the boxer's shorts. Kind of a Rocky vibe.
I forgot about that.
Another
80s
match. I really like that match. So, yes, this is how it plays out. And then it did go on for a bit too long. Like, there was a bit in the middle third that I thought that they could have cut out.
Yes.
But the end stuff was just fantastic storytelling, particularly all based around two turnbuckles. Like, you had all the stuff. It really felt like it was an absolute war in one little bit of the ring. Like, you didn't even care about the rest of the ring. It was all based around this turnbuckle. And it was Ricochet going for the purple Rainmaker elbow because he got cocky. It was like, I know, I'm going to beat you at your game. But Dream countered it. And then Dream went for Ricochet's move. Is that, no.
No, so he went for the purple Rainmaker. Where have I got my notes here?
This is after Dream has been slapping Ricochet, saying, yeah, "You belong in a bingo hall. Yeah. I'm awesome. I'm a wrestling god."
Yeah, he goes up top, but Dream rolls away, and he decides he goes, and then hits like a giant shooting star press.
Yes.
I've written here, and then Dream got the knees up. Yes, he got the knees
really
up of that,
far.
And got the near fall off. Yeah, it was a giant shooting star press, wasn't it? He got the near fall off of that. Then Dream tries to hit the purple Rainmaker 3/4 of the way across the ring, but Ricochet rolled out of the way, hit the 630, and got the win.
Yeah, so it's like that last third is just a battle of egos. And I really, really like that when it comes to wrestling, because you need story and you need character, so you've got a very solid foundation to work with. But it also really protects the guy that loses, because he's not lost because he lacks in physical ability or toughness. He's lost because of a character flaw. And that's so much more satisfying as a narrative, because Dream thought he could hit this elbow across the ring, when really he should have just gone for a simple move. But he wanted to better Ricochet and then some. Brilliant, brilliant stuff. That it's really, I've written here, absolutely blinding storytelling.
Yeah, it was really, really good. I thoroughly enjoyed this match. It was awesome.
And to get both men more over after a match. And it's Dream. It's Dream's character that allows this to happen for other wrestlers. Like, it's almost like the other wrestlers go, okay, I'm going to bring my wrestling ability to this. Dream, you bring the story and the character.
Yeah.
And it's been a perfect match every time they've gone out there. Feud after feud. And this was one of the commentators' better performances, because I really thought they communicated that story.
Mm-hmm.
Great stuff. I gave it 4.5 stars.
I can't dispute that.
Yeah,
it was great.
I thought it was great. Unfortunately, it wasn't so great next.
Yeah, I mean, positives. This video package also ruled. I really like this. I really, really like Shayna Baszler. I think Shayna Baszler is a really great character. She's a really great performer of that character as well. Just like the way she does her like sit down interviews and stuff, and the way she kind of like she freaked out at the end. I was just like, why are you even asking me that question? This is why I don't do these interviews and stuff like that. She's a very flippant character. I really like that, this sort of bully persona she's got, that she's like, why is anyone even trying to step to me? Because look at me, I'm Shayna Baszler. And then the sort of moments where she's like holding the belt and Nikki Cross sort of like does a little, you know, actually drops the belt and freaks out of it, and then just like, ooh. I just think that Shayna Baszler is someone who has not been doing this for very long, but has just got it. Really, really, she's picked this up insanely quickly. Much quicker than you could argue another four horsewoman who is up on, you know, somewhere else in this company, shall we say. I just think that she really has got something special in her. However, this wasn't the best match.
Ronda so far has had better matches.
I didn't say I said it was Ronda.
Has had better matches than Shayna Baszler.
Better matcher. She's only had the one.
Yeah, I know.
So she has
much better.
But much better.
Like,
well,
that's one of the best matches of the year.
It's probably in my top 10, absolutely. So there is always that. But then we watch Ronda week to week, and like, that wasn't the best.
So
but I always think that Shayna does.
So this match was based around Shayna being a bully to all the other women on the NXT roster, but how can you bully someone like Nikki Cross, who's insane and shows no fear? And it was effectively all built around Nikki no-selling, well, not no-selling stuff, but selling stuff by laughing Joker style in Baszler's face. And it just didn't click. It never really grabbed my attention, or definitely the crowd's attention, because they got distracted by something off screen.
I think it was a beach ball.
No, I hope not. I don't think an NXT crowd for Chicago.
I think someone sent us a message on Twitter to say that it was a beach ball.
Oh, that's a shame. I expect that on the main roster, where WWE don't respect their fans, but NXT really respects their fans. So shame on you, whoever did that.
That's all someone has said. I don't know if that is a fact, but it's just that is what someone sent to me.
Yeah. So no one really got invested in this. I mean, I'm speaking for me. Did you feel the same?
I thought the crowd weren't invested into it either.
But you personally?
Personally, I thought that the build, compared to mine, it's like a 2-week build. I thought the build was better than the actual match itself.
It's the same on a lot of this show. where it's stuff that seems to be thrown together in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, because the next
usually
match
takeovers
is...
are, apart from the main event, which is 3 years in the making, maybe they just, focused on that one.
Yeah.
But the end, and I have to say, takeover, this is the best thing about takeovers for me. Not the in-ring action, not the great feuds, it is the finishes. All five finishes on this show were brilliant. Just really good from character and story again. We keep saying that because those are the most important things. And Shayna has this sleeper locked in and Nikki is smiling in the sleeper. And that's because she's crazy. But the last thing is that her smile fades and she faints and she passes out. Yeah. So that's the end of the match. But a great visual to end on. Do you think Nikki's getting called up with Sanity?
Well, that seems to be the popular theory, is that they were, quote, holding off on debuting Sanity until Nikki was out of this feud and then can go up with them. I think that'd be a really good thing for Sanity. I think they're better as a foursome. I'm not sure I haven't enjoyed Nikki Cross on her own without the rest of them there. Like, it just seems just seems weird, like, not having all four of them there. It's just one of them there. But... you know, I think that would be a really good thing. But as I said, like when we said on the Saturday show, that the rumor is that there is a copyright issue with Sanity's name, which is why they've not debuted yet.
And also the Money in the Bank.
And also the Money in the Bank tag team ladder match got cancelled, and they didn't have a backup plan for them.
So I gave that 2.5 stars.
I think that was also fair. I mean, I just wrote that I enjoyed it, but it's okay. But I think that was more of the finish than anything else.
Then we got EC3 and Keith Lee being in the crowd. We've already spoken about that.
Certainly did.
And then we got our NXT title match, not the main event of the show, and I think rightly so.
Yes, I think when you've got something like this blood feud of Gargano and Ciampa, then it's okay for the NXT championship match not to be the main event.
Well, yes, unless this also had a good feud. But like you said, it's a 2 to 3 week build.
But also with the finish you had for that Gargano Ciampa match, it's the same like when they did the Chicago turn last year, because you had that big turn at the end of it. That match had to headline the show, because you need like that. You needed to end the show on that moment, and there was certain visuals in this that you kind of wanted to end the show on.
So the story of Aleister Black versus Lars Sullivan was that Lars can well. Alistair's been beating everyone with the black mass. You get hit by the black mass, you're done. But Lars can catch the black mass. Such a super cool spot and way to get over this storyline. Just as like one thing to build everything around. Because you've got so much mileage there. You can build a whole feud off of it and the actual in-ring action.
Yes.
So it's really, really tight.
They just chose to
concept-wise.
They just chose to do it in the last 2 weeks.
Yeah. It's the catchphrase so far. Great video package.
Yes.
And they have it's sort of good match. Like, I enjoyed it. But again, it's something didn't click. Like, I personally never, ever bought into any near fall of Lars Sullivan.
No, neither did I. And it's the same with, I thought, the Shayna Baszler Nikki Cross match. I never bought Nikki winning the match. And I wonder if that is because, like, these feuds have just only been built on the last couple of weeks of TV, rather than it's, like, been an extended feud that's been built around a lot more. And it's just been, you know, that spot where he caught the black mass, it was that, and he laid him out with a freak accident. Like, it's the only two angles that they have done to build this feud. It's not enough for a champion. Like, in my view, it's not enough to build a championship match when you have had 8 weeks' worth of television. Like, that, it's not enough.
I totally get you. And I agree, you do need more story to get us invested and kind of believe going into the match. But inside the match, when it's the action's actually underway, they can still do things to make me believe in their falls.
That's true. Yeah.
Like, I was not into the tag team match, for instance. But they won me over. They made me cheer the baby faces eventually. Because of the in-ring action.
It's very true.
So there really needed to be a spot at the start of the last act of this match where Lars hits like a freak accident out of nowhere and immediately goes for the pin and needs to make me go, oh, like that. But I never even got close to even a, ooh.
And I don't think the crowd did either.
No.
Crowd did not buy into Lars winning this match whatsoever.
Yeah. And that was the main problem, because all the other stuff, well, apart from one bit, oh, that was such a shame.
Such a shame. That's exactly what I wrote in my notes. Such a shame.
Yeah, that was... So, yeah, it was all good, competent stuff, and particularly impressive from Lars, because he hung in there, I thought.
Mm-hmm.
He had a good showing, and I just love the way he flails and moves around like this crazy human experiment of a monster.
Jack Kirby creation come to life.
Brilliant line from Morrow. But yes, at the end, really close to the end as well, Alistair Black goes for a black mass, slaps his leg for the sound, is a mile away from anything resembling a Lars Sullivan, and Lars Sullivan falls down, and everyone knows immediately. Like, I could just feel Black on the floor going, oh, crap. I could feel the referee going, oh, that looked terrible. Yeah. And all the commentators going, did it hit?
I don't think he got all of it.
Yeah, he didn't. He got nothing of it. Yeah, Nigel's trying to put it over, like, oh, yeah, he just, I mean, didn't even say, like, oh, I think the force of it, and just the...
the wind got him. It's such a powerful move. It's like a Dragon Ball Z thing. You get hit, but it's actually the explosion around it hurts you.
And the crowd kind of go into this stunned silence of, did that actually just happen?
Yeah.
And I think there was a moment where everyone was like, oh, that's a...
It's a shame. Yeah. A shame is a perfect way to describe it, because I've written it, shame about the finish. Mm. Yeah, so it's a bit of a shame.
But that feeling amongst the crowd didn't last long, because then they went into, you effed up.
Yes.
You effed up.
Because I thought, oh, I wonder if that was meant to be the finish.
Mm.
But then it turns out it wasn't supposed to be, because they did a spot instead where Alistair Black hit the black mass, actually did hit it this time, and Lars Sullivan fell down but got straight back up again. And I thought Nigel sold this really, really well on commentary. Nigel was going nuts.
Yeah.
In that, like, how is he still standing? Like, no one gets up from this. And so, yeah, the actual finish itself was fine, but it was a shame about that blown spot. Mm. And it's a shame as well that that's the sort of the big takeaway from the match, really, because there wasn't really anything else to kind of, like, remember from it. It's a shame.
Well, I think Lars Sullivan getting over is what I'm going to take from it, rather than
I don't know if he did get over in this loss, though.
Mm, I disagree. I really liked his performance, and I love the finish. He hits it, and then he doesn't stand back up, but he sort of gets up to one knee and is trying to... He's obviously knocked out, but he's got so much fight.
Mm-hmm.
And then Black has that look at him, that moment of, yeah, you're pretty tough. And then he hits another one. So, and it's like that show of respect that Braun Strowman gave Finn Balor, but done infinitely better, where Braun needed to give Finn two running power slams to put him away rather than one. Like, it was that show of respect. And it isn't a star-making performance of the... Yeah, I agree. But I like Lars more mm-hmm. at the end of this match than I did before. So,
yeah, I don't...
Mission accomplished.
I don't know if we'll ever see Lars... From the off the back of this, it almost felt like I can't see Lars Sullivan being in another championship match.
No.
Not anytime soon, anyway. So, but, you know... It was okay.
I gave it 3.5 stars.
It's probably more than I would have given it.
Mm.
But that's fair enough.
So, here we go. Main event time. Brilliant.
So here's
brilliant.
So here's the thing. You and I think people sort of, not took us to task a little bit, but I think people were a bit surprised at how, quote-unquote, down we were on this match being on this card, because you and I said... It's a shame that it's on this card, because we just had a match with them at the last TakeOver show. It almost feels like you could have stretched this out further, put Tommaso Ciampa into another match on this card, because you had an out of Johnny Gargano being injured, and you could have really played up around that, and just sort of prolonged this. Because especially with the finish of this, it feels like they're going to do another match at Brooklyn 4. And two wrestlers having three back-to-back TakeOver matches feels so un-NXT. Because NXT feuds are in very quick turnaround. Just feels so weird for them to have this three takeover series. So, and someone sent me a message before the weekend saying, like, which match are you most looking forward to? And I said, like, Ricochet versus Velveteen Dream. And they were surprised I didn't say Gargano and Ciampa. I was like, well, I saw that match last month. And then there's the other thing as well. It was an unsanctioned match. This was a street fight. They're the same thing. So it's not like it was even a different stip surrounding it.
No. Context-wise, it's different, because you're saying, as a promotion, we are not... This is not a licensed match. We have not endorsed this match.
I get that, but it's the same...
I get you. Yeah, from a hardcore standpoint.
Exactly, yeah. So, but I will say that as soon as, like, the video package played and as soon as this match started, I was like, God, I remember why this feud rules. And this is, like, it's one of the best feuds of the year. It's one of the best feuds that NXT has ever had. It's one of the best feuds that WWE has had in many a year. I loved this match. Absolutely loved it.
Yeah, so I'm eating humble pie right now because after this match, I'm really looking for... After
can,
that
I,
first...
can I have a slice?
Yes, there you go.
Oh, thank you very
friend.
Much.
Have some tea with it. Humble tea and humble pie. We'll have a full humble meal after this. With humble dessert. Should we get some humble dessert?
Why not?
Ooh, humble cheesecake.
It's a Sunday. Let's treat ourselves.
And so like after the first match, I really enjoyed it, but I was kind of like, yeah, that's... I'd be happy not to see that again for a while and let that stew in the background. But then watching this match and what they did with it, within 10 minutes in, I was just so into it and loving it. And it did go long, and it did have its inconsistencies with a few, like, why isn't the referee there? But overall, I absolutely adored it. I gave it 4.75 stars because... I still think Gargano Almas is the better WWE match of the year, and there's the other lofty one that everyone knows about now. But yeah, the really good stuff. Gargano comes down dressed as Captain America, which was an instant star.
I was going to say, I thought that's what he was meant to be dressed as, Captain America. But then I got distracted because Candice LeRae chases up, Johnny Gargano's wife, chases up behind him and hands him the crutch. It was the crutch that was used in the takeover match they had in New Orleans. It was the one that's broken in half. It's like, use this crutch. Now you go kick his ass. And I've just written here, Candice heel turn confirmed. Mm-hmm. But and then I remembered, yep, Vince Russo isn't booking this show. That's not what happened.
Literally a booking crutch.
Nice.
So we won't go spot by spot. No. I'll just mention that they brought into the crowd early on and a blatant fan plant.
Nice plant fan, yeah.
Yeah, and this isn't... I'm not saying Roman Reigns paid fans, but this guy is, like, so built like a wrestler, but dressed like a fan around actual fans who aren't built like wrestlers. Yeah, you stick out a bit there, mate.
Well, even more than that, he held a sign that said, Johnny Gargano used my sign. And I thought, oh, that's... Because I didn't realize he was a plant at first. And I was like, oh, that's quite cool.
Yeah.
And then Ciampa saw him, and I was like, oh, yeah, and Ciampa's going to tear that up. Excellent little bit of heel heat, because he's not even going to use the sign. Mm-hmm. But Ciampa couldn't tear it up, because he was like, what is this? And then Johnny Gargano got it and revealed it was a stop sign inside the sign. And I was like... Yeah, cool, nice plant then.
I want to know what those plants do after their spot. Do they just sit there and enjoy the rest of the match? Or do they slowly, you know, Rene Young off?
Or are they there the whole show? Just waiting for their moment.
John Cena WrestleMania 34 style. Yeah. So they... I mean, is there anything you wanted? I just want to get to the end.
Well,
really.
I was going to say, the story
there's so much to talk about.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, so you
well, have... I was going to say, the story of this match and the story of this feud has been that, like, Tommaso Ciampa is Psycho Killer, and he has been taking things too far, and he hurt Johnny Gargano before his championship match with Aleister Black, and he put him out on a stretcher, and he put him in the hospital, and everyone was going, like, Tommaso Ciampa, you took things too far. The storyline of this match was that the tables were reversed, and it was Johnny Gargano that was taking things too far. He played the Psycho Killer role towards the end of this match, and all of the shots were built around with Tommaso Ciampa being put on the stretcher and Johnny Gargano just sitting there looking at him almost like with a wave of his own, sitting the way that Ciampa has been sitting as he's been watching him being taken on a stretcher. It was just really, really beautiful master storytelling. And from that standpoint, I just loved this match. Yeah. It's so good.
That was the real hook. It was watching Ciampa drag Gargano down into his well of hate.
Yeah. And even like, and I loved, I was surprised actually, because there was a spot when Ciampa took Gargano up the ramp with his arm around him, exactly the same as they did at Takeover Chicago last year, and then threw him into the, and he did the exact same spot. The crowd didn't respond to it as much as I thought they would do. I thought the crowd, and I don't think the commentators, like, they said, like, well, this feels eerily similar. Mm. But the crowd didn't react to that as much as I thought they would do. Because isn't that such a great spot?
Yeah. Yeah, this was a long match. I think it went around 35, 40 minutes.
I think so, yeah.
And it was masterfully constructed. Because they would bring out bits, I'm talking the steel steps, the handcuffs, the crutches, and this brilliant bit, which as soon as it started to happen, Ciampa gets out the ring, he gets out a toolbox, and then I'm like, oh God, do not use like drills and things.
Yeah.
But then he gets some bolt cutters instead, and he starts snipping off the mat, the canvas that goes over the ring. And then he pulls that off, and he pulls off all the protected padding. So it's just the wooden boards. And that's like it for about half the match. So it gives it this really unique, chaotic look, just as a visual. I thought that was such a good spot. And then you almost forget about these things that they've set up.
Exactly.
It's like cocking loads of separate Chekhov's guns.
I said the exact same thing, because my wife came in partway through this match. Her two comments were, I don't like watching that beard man wrestle. He's very mean. It's like,
they both got beards.
The really big, bushy one. And she was like, he just like really hits him hard and it seems very mean. And then her other comment was like, the other one's very handsome.
Mm-hmm.
So two very different comments on this match. But she thought, when they did the exposed mat thing, she was like, well, I would have thought that the match would end when Johnny Gargano would then use that against Tommaso Ciampa. And then I was like, it's just Chekhov's gun. Mm. They're just loading up all of these Chekhov's guns to just set up. And like things like the trash can in the corner, I'd forgotten about. The crutches, I'd forgotten about.
The trash can was a really good bit.
The handcuffs, I'd forgotten about. It was only the mat one that I'd really remembered. But even then, they did so much other stuff after it that I had forgotten. Until they got back in the ring, I was like, oh yeah.
Yeah. So just by the way, a Chekhov's gun, for anyone who doesn't know, is from the playwright Chekhov, and he said, if you show a gun in the first act, you better fire it by the third act, otherwise what's the point of introducing it? It just, you know, the mm-hmm. audience wants setup and payoff, and that's what this all was. It was just setup, payoff. It's so satisfying to watch as a viewer. And like the first half of the match, or maybe even two-thirds, was them setting up these little bits that are going to play up later on, and you forget about them because there's actually so much anarchy elsewhere. Really brutal spots. There was a great callback to the powerbomb to the exposed outside from their previous match. There was a brute... What's that move that Ciampa does where he...
Yeah, and I thought you were going to ask me this because I was trying to remember what it was
said
called.
It on commentary.
I know, because Fit Finlay used to do it as well. And I was trying to think, like, what did Fit Finlay call it?
Mm.
And I couldn't remember what he called it either, because that's what I was just going to write in my notes. I could not remember for the life of me.
Let's just call it the Finlay driver, just for the rest of this. So he does a Finlay driver off the apron onto the steel steps on Gargano. It looked brutal. And then they, like what you said, Ciampa carries Gargano up the ramp, arm in arm. If you didn't know the story and you just came in here, it could almost be Ciampa helping a wounded friend up the ramp.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when he's at the top, he throws him into the LEDs like he did at when he first turned on him at TakeOver Chicago last year. And Ciampa's acting performance here is otherworldly, of just screaming, because the referee says, that's enough. And Ciampa's like, it's not enough. You don't know. I was already loving the match, but that just took it to another level of emotion where the villain becomes a three-dimensional force himself.
Yes.
And you're not just buying into the good guy, you're into the heel as well, and it just creates for a much more rounded experience.
Yeah.
Oh, I loved it.
Really, really enjoyed this. And then, so they had these tables set up, which is almost like NXT's version of the technical area, because there were some lights and some bits of paperwork around
it. Two laptops.
Were there laptops?
There were two closed laptops.
I just saw the paperwork that was there and the two little lamps that were there. And Ciampa sets up Gargano up on these sort of like these big crates and stuff, and he takes off Gargano's wedding ring, spits on it, and throws it away. Ultimate sign of disrespect.
That might be my favourite spot in the match. It was, even beyond the finish.
But then as he went to pick him up, Gargano reversed it, picked him up, and he hit his own Finlay driver, as we're now naming it. You don't even have to let us know in the comments what the move's called, because we know it's called the Finlay driver.
Everyone's gonna let us know.
Well, I know. But they hit the Finlay driver off the stage through these two tables, and oof, that looked like it sucked.
Mm.
They hit so hard.
I don't know, like, they didn't bounce.
No, they didn't.
Like, that's what made me worried. It was just a slap.
And also, because, like, I believe with the move as well, because you've got your arm around their neck, it's like it's using, like, use your arm to kind of protect their neck. But Gargano's arm slipped off, and so Ciampa's head just hit the table and hit the floor so hard. So when they started pulling out the stretcher, I thought, it was like, this does feel very real, because they're doing a very good job of making this feel real. And then they put him on the stretcher. They start to take the stretcher away. But Johnny Gargano looks and he's not wearing his wedding ring anymore because it's been thrown, it's been spat on. And so he flips out. And he starts, and he just starts dragging Ciampa down the ramp. He's like beating up all these security guards. And he locks in the Gargano escape. And Ciampa taps out. Security guards come in, bats away the security guards, knocks out the referee. He knocked out the referee on the ramp.
Well, I don't think he did.
He did. He pushed the security guard into the referee.
Yeah.
It's a referee, man. You've got a gust of wind. Okay. That Aleister Black black mask would have killed a referee. So the referee has been taken down. So Ciampa's tapping out, but he wasn't there. Then he gets the handcuffs and he locks Ciampa in there, locks the Gargano escape in there, and they film Ciampa like tapping out with his hands behind his back. And then the security guards drag Johnny Gargano out of the ring, and he beats them up again, and he goes around, gets back into the ring, wrong area. Ciampa DDTs him through the ropes onto the wood that they'd set up earlier, and then he just like throws himself on, and the referee's like, what do you want me to do? And Ciampa's like, pin, count the pin. And Ciampa's like, cool, okay, and counts the pin. Ciampa wins, and it's so good as well because Ciampa doesn't have entrance music. It's just silence,
just heat,
and it's just really, really great.
So many people in the crowd were shocked.
Yeah.
And really, and it got, so, like, it was this stunned silence. And then when the referee raised Ciampa's hand and Ciampa's smiling, the crowd just erupted into boos.
Yeah.
Like, there was a really clear, we're on Gargano's side. Throughout the entire match, the crowd were just as important an element of all of this as the wrestlers themselves. This is interesting because usually I like stories where the babyface doesn't sink to the heels level. And when they do, I start to disconnect with the babyface and like, oh, you're plunging into darkness, and it becomes another story. It's very rare for me to still be on the babyface's side when he's kicking the crap out of Ciampa. Ciampa's got his hands handcuffed behind his back. And Gargano is just super kick. Five super kicks in a row, I think. Yeah, it was five. Yeah. And then the Gargano escape. And never did I say in my head, that's enough now. You've had your revenge. I was like, kick him some more. Ciampa deserves every bit of it. And that's a testament to this story and how great a heel Ciampa's been. That I had no problem at seeing a man kayfabe really hurt.
Yeah, I just thought everything throughout this match was really, really great. And off the back of that, tying into what we were talking about earlier, I don't know what I would pick for my match of the night.
Right. Well, this was very much my one. I gave it I've already said 4 3/4. I thought it was really good. It's what I can't think. You won't see many better hardcore matches.
Yeah, that's very true.
Than this.
I suppose. Yeah, from an in-ring standpoint, the opening tag match was my favourite. From a storytelling standpoint, the Velveteen Dream Ricochet one was my favourite.
No, it wasn't.
Let me finish. From a storytelling point, but this was the combination of the two, and that made it my favourite match of the night.
Ah, no, you can't say this didn't have as much story and character as Dream and Ricochet.
What I just said was, from an in-ring standpoint, from a storytelling standpoint, like if you just take those two in isolations, like that was my favourite in terms of storytelling.
Uh-huh.
That's my favourite in terms of ring dust. This one did both of those exponentially better and had both of them together.
Oh, right. I thought you were saying...
That wasn't a better in terms of storytelling than this
right,
one.
Right, sorry, that's what I thought you were saying, just for clarification.
Sorry.
We're on the same page. Why do we argue?
I don't know. We love each other.
Well, what an incredible show it was. I love these Sundays. We have to come into the studio. I don't care. I've been so happy. You walk into the studio on NXT TakeOver post days.
Yep.
And I'm always just sitting there with a big grin on my face.
Because we just text each other going like, well, that was a great show. Oh. Like, it's going to be really fun to talk about.
What a surprise. Wrestling fans love wrestling. But tomorrow, we'll walk in and we'll go, well, like, here's my prediction. Because everyone's going to be like, follow that now, Money in the Bank. Meltzer said, the best match on this show probably won't even be the fourth best of the weekend overall. Just because of the best three matches on this show were so good. I think we'll all say Money in the Bank's going to be rubbish. We'll come in next morning and go, that wasn't so bad.
Yes. Well, did you see Drew McIntyre's tweet?
No.
So he, very much in character, he was like, this is a call out to the Raw locker room. if you don't look at the talent and the match quality of NXT TakeOver tonight, and you don't think that you can do as good as that, then you don't deserve to be here. Like, in so many words, that's essentially what he said. It was a really, like, good character piece for Drew, considering that's the role that he's been playing at the moment.
Well, I've got no doubt in the main roster, well, most of the main roster wrestlers' abilities. It's what they're allowed to do and the storylines they're forced to execute.
Yes, because they are put into matches that aren't designed to appeal to wrestling fans, really. They're appealed to the mainstream audience. The problem is that the mainstream audience don't really go to the shows. Hardcore wrestling fans do and don't get into the matches as much.
And who's to say that the NXT style of wrestling that's having success all around outside of WWE wouldn't work for casual and mainstream viewers?
Vince McMahon.
Yeah.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.